in seconds. Our next guest was a wife, a mother of two talented boys, the CEO of a successful wealth management firm at the pinnacle of career when tragedy struck. Mindy Corcoran joins us now to talk about her new book and her life, the journey of healing that she's been on, and the journey of forgiveness. The title of her new book is Healing a Shattered Soul. Mindy, welcome to the show. Good to have you with us.
Oh, Mr. Martinez, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you allowing me the time to share our family story.
Mindy, please call me Bill, okay? And you know, I just really I appreciate your respect, and our audience needs to hear your story. Tell us what happened.
Okay, thank you, Bill. I will. Yes, 7 years ago on April 13th, 2014, a white supremacist set on murdering Jews entered Overland Park, Kansas. I was at the Jewish Community Center in Overland Park, Kansas. My dad and my oldest son were driving into that parking lot, obviously not aware that any kind of ambush was about to take place. And as my dad parked the car and was getting out of the car, he was confronted and murdered. He was shot within 2 feet. The gunman had pulled up next to him and aimed and fired, murdered my dad on contact, and then turned the gun on my son. My son lost his life within about 30 minutes. The interesting thing and caveat about this whole thing that put me on such a journey, not just losing them, but the fact that I found them in the parking lot. I was pulling into the parking lot only minutes after this took place, and I found my father's body. I could tell that he was deceased, and then I found my son in the arms of two other men. And Bill, I heard the words, "Your father's in heaven. Go find Reet." Reet is the name of my son, and I found him. We lost both of them on that tragic day, and it shattered my soul.
You mentioned Thomas Bates. Tell us about Thomas. Could you hear me okay?
No, I heard you say Thomas Bates. I heard you say Thomas Bates.
Oh. Yes, the Army Combat Medic.
Yes, Thomas Bates was on campus at the time, and he was extremely helpful in securing the scene and working to try to help Reet survive. Those efforts did not help, but Thomas Bates was able to provide a very calming atmosphere for everyone that was there.
Now, certainly his background as an Army combat medic was helpful. But how was he affected by this event?
He was greatly affected because at the time he didn't have any children, and his experience had been on the battlefield, and that had been it. And he treated this as if it was as if it were on the battlefield. What that means is when I wanted to go over to Reet, he wouldn't let me. He treated Reet, he treated the wound. We talked later when I was writing my book, and what he found is that compassion was transferred to him from Reet, because at the time he had children. He realized, he reached out to me right after he had his first child, and he said, "I didn't know what it was like to love. I didn't know what it was like to be a parent." And he apologized for not letting me come over to Reet. And then now he looks at the victims of tragedies differently. It's not just the person that's specifically wounded, but it's also those around them.
Well, what a scene that had to be, and an experience for you. I mean, life is rolling along fairly good. I mean, you've got a successful business, and in literally seconds, your world's turned upside down. What was your next thought, Mindy?
You know, I think my next thought was, how do I breathe? How do I breathe again? How do I live? I mean, it was that simple. When you have something that tragic happen, you expect that your life is going to end as well. And I felt like it did, and we all did on that day.
And God knew that you needed some help and comfort, and it came in the form of an interfaith group of people at the hospital that came alongside you. Tell us about that, if you would.
It did, Bill, and that gives me really great to consider and remember and think about. And, yeah, so the emergency room trauma team happened to be from different faiths. The emergency room doctor who handled Reed when he was received is Jewish, Dr. Fishman. And there was a Christian, a Catholic, a Hindu. They were all on the team together. And at the time, I didn't know that because there's so much chaos going on. But as we re-engaged later, I found out that they were an interfaith team. And now they remember every April 13th, our family. But that interfaith process also was in a small room when a Jewish rabbi and a Christian minister were praying with our family. So immediately interfaith was upon us. And that's so important because the man was a white supremacist, the murderer, and he wanted to murder Jews. And our family's Christian. And so that set me on a path to create the Faith Always Wins Foundation. And we promote dialogue for the betterment of our world through kindness, faith, and healing. And it's all on an interfaith platform.
At the time, I'm sure you probably couldn't see it. In your grief, all that you must have been going through at that moment in time, but looking back, can you see clearly, the hand of God and his peace and comfort surrounding you and your family by bringing this broad group of people with broad religious persuasion and beliefs, to come to the aid of your family?
Yes, I did. So I felt God speak to me. When I heard the words, "Your father's in heaven, go find Reed," I was afraid. I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know who had spoken it at the time. And I was concerned about telling anyone because I thought they'd think I was, psychotic. And I, this crazy mom who came upon a traumatic scene, hearing voices. But I shared what I heard with my pastor, Adam Hamilton, that evening, and he said to me, "Keep listening." And so, Bill, you're absolutely right. I kept listening. I listened to people as they walked alongside us from my faith as Christianity and from other faiths to help me understand and have a better perspective.
Well, and this is the thing where people get a little bit confused at times, and they're really not sure how God works, especially if they see God at a distance and do not realize that God is very much involved in our daily events. He's involved in each step that we take. If we can understand and have eyes to see and ears to hear. And there have been many people, who have responded in times of tragedy and otherwise that believe they hear the voice of God. And to me, it's much the same way. I keep using this as an example. When the blind man was challenged, he just says, "Well, who did this? What are you doing? You're not blind anymore." And he goes, "I don't understand. All I know, I was this way. Now I am. I was. I am." And this is what happens in our experiences with God. It's a supernatural dimension that in our normal lives we can't understand, but yet we know that you heard the voice. Now, whether you want to attribute that to God or not, I'm sure as your pastor wisely admonished you and encouraged you to do, is to keep listening, right?
Absolutely. And that's what I've been doing over the past 7 years. I listen and I lead with my heart. And I believe that God is in me. God is in my heart and in other hearts. And that's how we see God work through people. And so many people came
alongside
us.
Well, we want to hear more of your story on the other side of this break. As I said, she's a wife, mother of two talented boys, CEO of a successful wealth management firm at the pinnacle of her career when this tragedy that she spoke of hit her and her family. Mindy Corporan is with us. We're talking about her new book, Healing a Shattered Soul. 14 minutes before the top of the hour, our conversation with Mindy Corporan continues. She's telling her story, how a mother was healed with compassion and learned to forgive in her new book, Healing a Shattered Soul. Mindy, we talked about Reed, your son who was murdered, and of course your father. And my question, I'm sure our audience wants to know, how's your other son doing?
Thank you so much, Bill. Bill. Our second son, Lucas, is 19. He was 12 at the time of the murders. And it was a very, very difficult first 4 years. And then there were a lot of transitions made. And now at 19, he's a sophomore at the University of Arkansas, and he is doing amazing as well.
Well, that's good news, because something like this, you know, this is your story, but it's the family story, the impact that it had, and even in your faith family, when something so tragic can happen like this, and people coming alongside, including your pastor and your immediate family, and then you found other people who also, as you experienced even in the hospital, how they came together. In your book, you describe what we call guilt stemming, you know, from that day that you kept bottled up. What made you keep that guilt inside?
See, Bill, I had scheduled the day. I selfishly had scheduled that day of audition so that I would be in town. There were two options for me to audition. And one of the audition times and days was when I was out of town with my husband on our wedding anniversary. It was a little bit earlier in April. I wanted to be in town. I wanted to be with them and take him. And so I scheduled it when I could be there. And then as it turned out, my dad drove him because I went to and felt like I needed to go to the lacrosse game of our younger son. Mm-hmm. And so my dad was ambushed, and I held that. Because I think that's just what I do. I held some grief and I held the guilt so tightly that why did I schedule it then? And then why did I not drive? Because what if I had driven it into a different parking lot? What if I'd gotten there at a different time, et cetera? But I had to let that go. And I felt like my dad and we would want me to let that go. Believe me, Bill, on occasion, I still feel it. And I, yes. You know, if it's my dad's birthday or my mom's birthday, missing my father. And I will say to myself, I will say to dad, I am so sorry. But then I can release it and I can move onward and forward, which has been very healthy for me.
And, you know, for some people, you know, they want to immediately get to that place of peace and understanding. But this is a process. And, you know, and when we realize that God orders our steps and we're walking faithfully with him, our natural instinct is to ask why and shoulda, coulda, woulda, and the possibilities. But, you know, that in a sense becomes irrelevant, because the facts tell you what happened is what happened. And it's like, you know, and I'm talking about this in a way, and forgive me, I don't mean to sound so disconnected. I'm just in processing this and trying to put myself in your shoes as you work through this. And it's, I think it's natural, you know, for all of us human beings to hold on to something, to consider the possibilities. And until you get to that point, you know, that you trust God and let it go. But boy, I'll tell you, that's so difficult, and that happens in everything, in relationships, marriages, whatever, you know, any experience in life, but something like this even more so. So to hold on to that is understandable, and even, you know, like you say, even to this day, it'll find a way to, you know, come out and knock you off balance. It's like the evil one wants to unsettle you, especially because God has been blessing you and comforting you all this way, and he would love nothing better for you to doubt your faith.
I didn't understand evil. I want to start with that as a response. I didn't understand evil and had never addressed evil in my life until this happened. And I'm very aware of evil, and in the subtitle of my book is the word domestic terrorism on purpose, because terrorism can come from all different places. And this was a United States citizen who had been a white supremacist neo-Nazi for years upon years, and people knew him and knew how he espoused hate. And when those of us who do not feel that way or espouse hate think, oh, it's not going to affect me, I'm a white Christian woman, he's not going to affect me. Well, I'm here to tell you, Bill, that that is the wrong attitude, because hateful rhetoric affects all of us. in any way, hateful in any direction, can spin out of what we would say control, and then it can affect us. And that's what happened. And our family was shattered from that. And I also feel like I want to say to you and to your listeners to help understand how I found forgiveness. I don't forgive him for what he did, but I remove hate from my heart. I am not going to allow him to debilitate me too or my other family members. And so we don't speak his name. We don't talk about him. We remove him from our hearts because we don't want to validate what he did or that hate rhetoric in any way.
Exactly. But as you say, you're much wiser about evil as a result. And your words here, even to our audience, is catching their attention, that we cannot take things for granted. I mean, we live in a culture today where, you know, crime rate is up, suicide rate, things that counter the heart of God, you know, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. These are characteristics that, you know, come from God. And they're all under attack right now because we've been casual about our response with evil. And it seems like, sadly, it may have to get worse before it gets better. But we know ultimately it will be better. But meanwhile, we've got to walk this out. That night at a vigil, you attended and spoke to the crowd. And you felt you had to do this because it was God was bubbling something in your spirit that had to be spoken, right?
Vigil. I was told, I heard the words, it's a student vigil, and I wanted to go speak to those students and let them know that that their life would continue, that this would be tragic, this was tragic, it would be sad. I didn't know, Bill, at the time how completely debilitated I was going to be at times when I was speaking to them, but I wanted to encourage them to keep living life because my son, Reed, and my dad lived life, and they loved one another, and they loved humanity itself. And I wanted to encourage other people to feel the sadness, sit in the sadness, and then be able to process it and move on, because we have life to live, and we have other responsibilities to one another in the future. And that's why I went to speak at that vigil. I did feel, I remember when I walked to the podium, I thought to myself, what am I going to say? And I said, God, you know why I'm here. And I just let him speak through me. And that was the message that I put across to people. It was helpful. I've been told it was very helpful in settling the room and helping people understand love, hope, and faith.
Wow, I bet. You know, we talked about hearing from God, and I like your term. You use God winks as a reference to these utterances that you get from God. Share some more God winks with us, if you would.
Well, I get messages all the time. I get these winks or messages. There is a book called God Winks, so I don't at all want to steal that. So I want to make sure and make that apparent that that's not my book, but I do use the term God Winks. And the messages come to me in a variety of ways. So frequently I will see yellow butterflies. A yellow butterfly started appearing to me in the first week after their murders, and I was encouraged to look up. I received a card from someone, and they said, look up. And so I just read the card, and I looked up, and there was this yellow butterfly going by. And Bill, yellow butterflies appear all the time. I'll get messages. There was a young waitress that I had the opportunity to have serve me yesterday, and she had a tattoo, and she looked at my tattoo of my yellow butterfly, and we engaged about that. And then I explained to her why I had a yellow butterfly tattoo. Well, she became quiet and solemn. And then within a few seconds, she said, I think I'm supposed to tell you that I lost my mom when I was 11. And I feel like I can get encouragement from you that you lost your son. And so we chatted, and it opened up a conversation. There are messages like that available for all of us if we keep our eyes and ears open, if we listen.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I often refer to that that appropriate word. You don't know where that word comes from, you know, but suddenly it's there. It comes, you know, for us of faith, we believe the Holy Spirit will deposit that word into us. It goes out, find its mate, and touches the right person at the right time. That is priceless, you know, when you think about that, isn't it?
And when people don't have faith, I know your listeners do and most likely do, but if someone is struggling with their faith, I'll tell them, when you feel that intuition that you're supposed to say something or do something for the benefit of someone else, but you're concerned about it, really reach into that, and I call it courageous kindness. Step into your courageous kindness and help someone else.
Exactly. Your son Lucas came up with a clever way to get his parents to laugh after so much sadness. We got about 40 seconds. Can you tell us that story quickly?
Lucas, listen, he loves every Will Ferrell movie there is. And so he wanted us to gather. He gathered my husband and myself when we could barely smile about anything. And we watched every Will Ferrell movie there was because he wanted us to laugh. He wanted to hear laughter in our house. He had a really mature intuition at the age of 12.
Without a doubt. Well, Mindy, God bless you. Thank you for the healing that you're doing, you know, in your family and in others with your story, Healing a Shattered Soul. The book will be linked at our website at BillMartinezShow.com. God bless you, Mindy. Appreciate it.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer.